I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum from University of Notre Dame, Australia. Welcome back, Martin.
Always good to be here, Michael.
Well, I say a week's a long time in politics. Well, even days and hours, and things are moving pretty quickly, Martin. Before we get to what's happening in the Middle East and it looks like Ukraine, lots happening in Fremantle. The mayoral and ward local government elections are just about over today and tomorrow, the last 2 days for voting, and we'll know presumably Saturday night just who the mayor is, whether it's the old mayor or the new mayor, and just who's won in the ward. Should be quite interesting. And then after that, the PM, he's not far from heading off to visit Donald Trump himself in Washington, and presumably he'll be carrying samples of Australian lithium and other rare earths to do mega deals with the mega man. But in the meantime, my prediction that Donald Trump would win the Nobel Peace Prize came to nothing, Martin. You were right. But I still think I was right. I think if they had given it to him, he would have been even quicker in trying to solve the Ukraine problem. But let's do one thing at a time this morning. Although I have to add, if he can pull off the Ukraine dispute, the war there, then they'll probably have to have a special sitting out of session in Oslo to grant him the Peace Prize or another one. But will anything actually be different on the ground in Gaza in 2 years? We've had a 2 year war. The first parts of the 20-point peace plan have been met. The 20-odd hostages who survived have been returned. There's debate about how many remains of the ones who didn't survive can be found to be returned. But I'm wondering whether it'll actually look any different on the ground in 2 years' time.
Well, peace processes are long-term processes, and they take a lot of time. If we still have a ceasefire, if there's still no fighting in 2 years' time, Michael, I claim that as a victory. That doesn't mean that the issues have been resolved. But as we said last week, just stopping the fighting provides a reprieve, particularly for the people in Gaza who've had the entire lives wiped out, and how can they rebuild at all? So I'd be pleased if there's just no fighting for starters. But there's a lot of points on this plan that, if realised, offer a lot of hope. But we can already see, Michael, just with the steps in the early steps of the plan, some problems. I'll just outline a couple of problems that have emerged. One is that Hamas is unable to deliver all those deceased hostages' lives. Sorry, that's not quite right. The deceased hostages' bodies. And that's not that surprising, given that quite a few of those would be buried under massive piles of rubble, you presume. So how the hell would they find some of those people? But I'm not sure if that itself will totally derail the process. I think the worst thing that Israel would do would be not to implement the entry of aid and the distribution of aid into the Gaza Strip, which is a key next point on the plan. Doing so actually plays into the hands of Hamas and other armed gangs, because if there's a shortage of aid, they can then commandeer it and use it to weaponize that against the population. The best thing Israel could do is actually flood the Gaza Strip with aid, humanitarian aid, because if there's a hell of a lot of it, then there's no currency on it, and you can't use it, you can't weaponize it. I don't know why they didn't do this a long time ago. I think it would have changed all of the messaging in the international community, perhaps, would have helped them with their reputation. It wouldn't have resolved everything. There was still a lot of atrocities that have been going on, but I think it would have at least alleviated some of the problems. So if they're smart, that's what they should do, because that will actually undermine Hamas. If there's a lot of food and medication floating around, it's much harder for Hamas to try and restrict it to people.
Well, it's a little bit like the stock market when you read the stories about the supplies that are coming in, slow or fast, that people are beginning to hoard them because they don't trust that there'll be a continued peace. But when you go back to the 20-point plan, and once again, on this posted article, along with the podcast, our listeners can click on the 20-point plan and follow it for themselves. If you're a lawyer drafting a commercial agreement, you'd say that paragraphs 1 and 2 are preamble. They're going to be de-radicalized and they're going to redevelop for the benefit of Gazans the whole string. Number 3 is really important because the war immediately ends if both sides agree to the proposal. And on the face of it, that's happened. And within 72 hours, all hostages, alive and deceased, to be returned. You commented about the problems with the deceased. And once they are, clause 5, then you start to get the life sentence prisoners returned, and a number have been of the Gazans, the Palestinians. And then 6, you get to this tricky thing about once all hostages are returned, Hamas members who commit to peaceful coexistence and to decommission their weapons will be given amnesty. It doesn't say they have to, when you read it carefully, commit to peaceful coexistence or decommission their weapons. And if you look at the television news and the executions that Hamas is committing on other Palestinian groups, then you wonder what on earth's going to happen there. And that would bring the whole thing to an end quickly too, wouldn't it?
I think there was a fierce reminder about why new governance is needed in Gaza. I'm just surprised that there's Australian politicians calling on the Australian government to return refugees to Gaza. If you look at what's happening in Gaza, they are a long way away from a stabilised, peaceful environment that could receive people again. Some of those immediate steps are actually really critical and important. We've mentioned 8, so 7 and 8 are really critical, but
Right.
nine, number 9 that you've talked about, you've alluded to, this is about the setting up of some kind of committee.
This is the critical thing, isn't it? You have to go to this new governance stage. You're not going to be doing any redevelopment. You're not going to be able to have anything happening if you haven't got to 9. Gaza will be governed under the temporary transitional governance of a technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee responsible for delivering the day-to-day running of public services and municipalities for the people in Gaza, be made up of qualified Palestinians and international experts, and it would call the Board of Peace, chaired by President Donald J. Trump. Well, my goodness. And Tony Blair's being dragged in. I mean,
I love how Tony Blair's just randomly
just
noted
randomly
that
noted, he's a mate of Jared Kushner. So, it's all, I mean, nepotism's alive and well, but leaving that aside, I mean, will this happen? Will we see it? I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
I think this is going to be the next litmus test for the plan. If they were able to enact 9 and it starts going okay, so they were to bring in pretty quickly some transitional body. And I think this is where the Arab states are really crucial, Michael, because it's going to look really bad and it wouldn't work if somehow Western countries decide they're going to peace keep in this area. I think the only solution is for a number of Middle Eastern countries to step up, like Qatar and Turkey and others, and say, look, we're going to put our troops in here. The first thing you need is the maintenance of peace and order. It's the absolutely crucial thing. You can't have everyone fighting each other in the streets. You
It
can't
has
have
to
people
happen,
being.
doesn't it? You cannot. I mean, one hates to say this, but you have to have some sort of peacekeeping force in there. Hopefully, as you say, made up of the Middle Eastern countries and Turkey and Egypt and the like, which has credibility, because you cannot let Hamas continue to do what they're currently doing.
No, that needs to happen as soon as possible, because the longer this other business goes on, I think that that's got a lot of potential to undermine the pathway forward. So I
Well,
would think that's your next litmus test right there, because there's other things. If you go further down, Michael, the economic development plan and economic zone all sounds lovely, and actually successful peace plans have been built around economic development, so it actually does make sense. If you think of Japan, which was a wasteland after World War II, the US did plough truckloads of money into Japan. And that was a sensible thing.
Let's not forget Germany. The Marshall Plan came to the fore, and it was powerfully rebuilt. Probably hadn't lost so much infrastructure as this small Gaza Strip, which seems to have been flattened. But then you've got, well, 11 and 12, you've sort of alluded to there. No one has to leave Gaza. You can if you want to. But then 13, Hamas and other factions agreed to not have any role in the governance of Gaza, directly, indirectly, or in any form. Well, I mean, is that aspirational?
I think it's only aspirational. I think it's really kind of complex. Where does Hamas stop and start? Where Hamas, another story for people less familiar with this, there's a whole range of other armed militias that sit in that Gaza Strip, and some of them have good relations with Hamas, well, some kind of relationship with Hamas, like Islamic Jihad, which participated in the October 7 attack. Where do these militias stop and start? Who is and isn't considered for some role? Michael, I mentioned to you a jailed dissident called Marwan Barghouti, who's fairly well regarded amongst a lot of Palestinians, but he was convicted of serious attacks decades ago. Does that rule him out? There's a lot of complications there around who can and can't have a role in this.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Donald Trump, when he sat down with his big broad pen and knotted out these 20 points, did actually think it through. You get to 14. We've been surmising just how you're going to make things work there. A guarantee will be provided by regional partners to ensure that Hamas and the factions comply with their obligations and that New Gaza poses no threat to its neighbours or its people. So that bit's been worked in. 15, the United States will work with Arab and international partners to develop a temporary international stabilization force to immediately deploy in Gaza. Well, we talked about that last time, but if we see that start to happen, well, that's really important. The ISF will train and provide support to vetted Palestinian police forces in Gaza and will consult with Jordan and Egypt. So there we are. People have already put their hands up, it seems, when Donald Trump was drafting this. And then you get into to the guts of it. Israel says in 16 it won't, or he says that Israel will not occupy or annex Gaza. I mean, we've been wondering whether the Gazans, whether the Hamas can hold to this plan, but what about Israel? Israel will not occupy or annex Gaza. It wouldn't take much to tip them over and out of that agreement.
And Trump could easily kind of empower them by claiming that someone, people in Hamas hadn't honored their part of the agreement. So it won't take much for this to fall over at all. Point 15 is interesting, Michael, because I would actually say point 15 probably belongs now, because unless you provide a stabilization force, then nothing else can be achieved.
So, and of course, 16 about Israel not occupying Gaza, it does depend, naturally enough, on that ISF in 15 doing its job. Because if you've got it there, you don't need the IDF to be in its Gaza Strip. They've been pulled right back because everyone can be happy it's working. 17, in the event Hamas delays or rejects the proposal, the above, including the scaled up operation, will proceed in the terror free areas handed over. Well, that's sort of an interesting thing. 18, an interfaith dialogue process will be established based on the values of tolerance and peaceful coexistence to try and work things out between the Palestinians and Israelis. Well, that's nice and aspirational, but it is the sort of thing people have worked on in the past. 19, while Gaza redevelopment advances and when the PA reform process is faithfully carried out, the conditions may finally be in place for a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood. And 20, the United States will establish a dialogue between Israel and the Palestinians to agree on a political horizon for peaceful and prosperous coexistence. So a lot of aspiration, but what are the critical things then if we're saying, will things look just the same in 2 years' time, for them not to look the same in 2 years' time, to have the green shoots of a redevelopment plan?
Well, I think that in principle, the plan does make sense. I mean, there's things you could quibble with, and as you say, Michael, some of the steps are out of order, and it reads more like a, I don't know, a narrative document than some legal agreement there. But they're good aspirations, because actually, if you're going to have proper peace, these are two people that need to live side by side in harmony. So the interreligious dialogue, that sounds good. I don't know how well it will be achieved, but it does kind of make sense in that to that degree.
So the hostages who'd somehow survived their capture have been returned. Something we hope you and I will work out, recognizing the difficulties in finding the remains of the hostages who didn't survive. And then you've got this making it work thing. And it seems to me that Hamas with their guns and wanting to control the area right now are acting in any way but trying to make this plan work.
I think there's a genuine fear in Hamas that, which is probably well founded, that they're going to be completely shut out by this, and the actual core leadership of Hamas is committed to Israel's destruction and to resistance. So, this is not really where's their relevance if this is fully enacted?
Well, the 20-point plan depends on them being totally irrelevant, paying
That's
no part
right.
in the future governance. I mean, if that can't happen, doesn't happen, it's impossible for it to happen because these people are the freedom fighters. How does the core of this redevelopment plan occur?
Maybe they can be convinced to lead comfortable lives in Iran or somewhere else, and be satisfied that in effect they're achieving a Palestinian state, which is, a very important long-term goal. But I think that's been part of the problem all along, in that it's good to be a freedom fighter, it's good to rebel, but there has to be a political objective at the end of that.
Martin, do we have any relevant, useful examples of places where people have gone through being freedom fighters, fighting a good fight, and then doing the deal and things over generations perhaps settling down? I mean, does Northern Ireland provide any example? Are there other places, or is it just a pious hope?
Well, Northern Ireland, I think, offers some hope. And what was different there was, of course, a group, the IRA, which was committed to violence and used it liberally, was co-opted into the peace process. That was an uncomfortable reality. Imagine if you're a victim of violence for many people involved in it, in that conflict. But by having them in the room, that was probably the only way to really ensure long-term success. There were splinter groups. Remember the real IRA, Michael, that never accepted that peace process. But what that having the IRA in the room actually isolated and marginalised those few extremists so that they were no longer relevant.
Martin, we should finish this discussion soon because we don't want to invite each other to say whether things will be as drastic on the ground in 2 years' time as they are presently, because in a sense, who knows? And it's going to depend on what happens with this force that's meant to come into to play very, very soon, the ISF, the International Stabilization Force. So let's see if that happens. But we've got this other strange development. We've had Trump talking to Putin, the setting up talks between the two countries, the groups are at it as we sit here talking, and Trump's planning to turn up in Orban's part of the world, Hungary, to talk to Putin. Everyone's going to try and claim some victory, but it sounds like there could be something happening in Ukraine. Do you think if that were to happen, and we'll come back to that next week when it's develop further, but that can have a flow-on effect here in the Middle East and build up some sort of momentum, like in a football match for peace more generally.
That's a very good point. I think Ukraine's an important step. Ukraine's not just about some immediate conflict, of course. It's about the global actors that are behind it. And achieving peace in Ukraine might help. It helps with stability in Europe, but it also helps with these great powers, so to speak, Russia and the US. And if there's some kind of better relationship between Russia and China, for example, that's another one. If Trump was able to pull all of those pieces off, they are major steps forward. And it was only a year or two ago, I think we're all probably in a very pessimistic viewpoint about how a lot of the global environment was going. There's still major wars, Michael, Sudan and elsewhere, but they're big steps forward.
Oh, Martin, I'm feeling just slightly more confident about the state of the planet as we sit here talking right now. I hope I can maintain it, but I'll hold everything right now and say, see you next Friday.
Look forward to it.